Journeys to Biblical Counseling on this edition of Truth and Love. I'm Dale Johnson, and you're listening to Truth and Love, a podcast of the Association of Certified Biblical Counselors, where we seek to provide biblical solutions to the problems that people face. This week on the podcast, I'm always delighted to spend time with Dr. Heath Lambert. He became the senior pastor of First Baptist Church Jacksonville in September of 2017. Prior to serving at First Baptist, Pastor Heath served as the executive director here at ACBC and as professor at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. He's the author of several books, including The Biblical Counseling Movement After Adams, Finally Free, Fighting for Purity with the Power of Grace, Transforming Homosexuality, A Theology of Biblical Counseling, and The Great Love of God. He's married to Lauren, and they have three children, Carson, Chloe, and Connor. Heath, it's always a pleasure to have you on the podcast and just enjoy time with you, brother.
Very glad to be here. I tell you when we're alone, and I tell you in front of people that I am so thankful for you and your leadership. ACBC conference this year was so encouraging. You are an exemplary leader, and I'll do whatever you want me to do. So I'm happy to be here.
Well, I'm glad we have that recorded now. Commitment to do whatever. That sounds like a blank check to me, and I look forward to that. So listen, we're here to talk. So many people are encouraged by stories, always wondering, you know, how did people that we listen to and read come into biblical counseling? Before we get into that, I want you to, for people who may not be familiar with you, Heath, tell a little bit about your story. Obviously, a little bit about First Baptist Church in Jacksonville. Just a little bit about the man, Heath Lambert, your family, that sort of thing.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm married to my wonderful wife, Lauren. We've been together for over 20 years now, just celebrated our 20th anniversary back in the summertime. And we have three kids. You mentioned Carson, Chloe, and Connor. So Carson is our 18-year-old. He's in college, and I don't know how that happened. I remember holding him up on my chest when he was born, and now he's driving off to college and doing all these weird things that grown-ups do. And then we've got our wonderful, precious, beautiful, perfect daughter named Chloe. She's just absolutely wonderful, maybe the funniest person I know, and just great. And then Connor, our little guy, might be the nicest person I know. I always tell them they're my four favorites, and I'm glad I get to live with them. I got saved when I was 14 years old. I've been walking with the Lord my entire adult life. I've been in ministry, either pastoring or executive directing or professing or something along those lines. So I'm thankful to be serving the Lord. I always tell everybody my greatest privilege after getting to live with my four favorites is getting to serve the incredible congregation of people at First Baptist.
Yeah, amen. I know a little bit about your story, Heath, so I'm going to ask a couple of things that I think could be helpful and important for even listeners. You talked about coming to faith at the age of 14. We did a conference several years back. As a matter of fact, it was the last one that you were leading ACBC on the issue of abuse, and you told a little bit about your story. And talk a little bit about that and how that's been impactful for you as you moved into biblical counseling.
Yeah. So my mom was a raging alcoholic. Actually, she was a drunk before I was ever on the scene. And then she continued to be a drunk after me and my twin brother were born. We also have two older brothers. One is 13 years older than we are, and another is 11 years older than we are, but he died a few years ago. So now there's just three of us. But yeah, she was a raging alcoholic. By the time we were born, my older brothers kind of weren't there very much because my mom and dad had divorced and they were living with her. So we were just these little kids alone with a drunk woman who was angry. She was angry at us. She was very violent. And so that really made, you know, I don't have a lot of happy memories from childhood. I have no happy memories in childhood with my mom. That's a real loss. You try to think, man, is there a happy memory with mom? And I can't remember when. All my memories with my mom are scary and bad and harsh. She got sober when I was a teenager, and she got saved when I was in my late 20s. And she lived, we didn't know it at the time, but she had 5 years left to live. She would get diagnosed with cancer about 4 years after that and make it about 6 or 8 months. And she became, in those 4 years of following Christ, she became one of the sweetest people I ever met. So it's this incredible thing to have horrible, nightmarish memories about this woman who Jesus changed, and she became sweet, a wonderful mom, a wonderful grandmother, wonderful mother-in-law. But in terms of the impact on my life, honestly, you know, I am thankful for it all. The Lord used it in part to bring me to faith in Him. And honestly, it has helped my ministry I'll never know how much. When I'm talking to people who are scared, when I'm talking to people who are overwhelmed and sad because of pain that they're experiencing from a loved one, I've never in my life had to wonder what that feels like. I've always, with those kinds of people, had sort of relational capital, because when they know, hey, this is somebody who's been through it and who understands, that has really helped. So I'm thankful that there were two really, really hard seasons in my life, and that was the first one. And the Lord has used it to get a lot of glory for His name and create a lot of blessings. I'm a better dad and a better husband. I remember being 9 years old and saying, I am not going to be this way. I wasn't safe, but I'm not going to have this kind of home. And so I think about it a lot. I think about it every day. I want to have love and joy and peace in my home and not anger and volatility and division. And so it was painful and awful, but the Lord used it for good.
You know, it's amazing when we hear stories like that, the Lord promises these types of things, bringing beauty from ashes. And it's always wonderful. And I appreciate the way that you honor the Lord and give Him glory. And it's made a difference in your life for sure. As you think about biblical counseling, obviously, you know, most people see you as, you know, the former executive director and now leading a wonderful biblical counseling ministry at First Baptist Jacksonville. You've written books on biblical counseling, but there's always a story of how we were introduced to biblical counseling, how we were exposed to it. Some of the people who were very influential. Talk a little bit about your story in that way, Heath, how you were exposed to biblical counseling.
Yeah. So I always say that I was a biblical counselor or committed to biblical counseling before I even became a Christian, because my mom was a drunk and I saw all this stuff. And I remember I've been to so many AA meetings. I mean, I've been to more AA meetings than a lot of drunks have been, because my mom, we didn't have childcare or anything. So my mom would be court ordered to go, and the twins would come along with her, and we, you know, the Lord's prayer at these things and keep coming back, and it works if you work it. I mean, I heard all the stuff, and I can remember in early conversations where my mom would be trying to express remorse over what she had done to hit us or mistreat us or whatever. And she would always say, that wasn't me. That was my disease. And just as a little kid, I would go, now that's weird, because my grandpa died of cancer. And I thought, okay, now that cancer seems like a disease, but you're drinking too much and not going to work and sleeping around and hitting kids, and that doesn't seem like a disease. I didn't know 9 or 8 or 10. I didn't have words, but I'm like, that doesn't seem like you were sick. It seems like you were something else. I don't even know what I would have said, but it just didn't sit right. And so then I get saved my freshman year of high school in a Southern Baptist church, Southern Baptist Sunday school teacher, still a dear friend of mine, still really a part of our family. Still love very much. She shared the gospel with me and I believed it freshman year of high school. And then I had a friend who was at a graduate school that was integrationist. She was studying counseling. I was a sophomore in high school, and she's coming back and she was talking about how in her counseling program, she said that she was learning that in counseling, you have to, no matter how bad someone is, you have to get rid of the bad. You have to stop looking at the bad, and you have to start thinking about the good. She said, because the deal is, since you, the counselor, aren't bad like that, you've got to find some way to identify with the good, or you'll never be able to help them with the bad. And I thought, now that just sounded weird to me. It sounded strange, like, because I'm a new Christian. I've been a Christian a few months, really, maybe a year. I was like, I thought we were all bad. I thought that's how it works. So I was confused. And so I said, I need to figure out something about counseling. So I went to the CBD catalog. If anybody remembers that, before there was an internet, there was a CBD catalog.
The Christian Book Distributor.
That's
yeah.
Right. And it was this newspaper print stapled thing. And I went to the counseling section, and sophomore in high school, and I don't know anything. And there is this inset picture of Competent to Counsel by Jay Adams. And it was featured that month. And it was it's the line under it said, the classic Christian introduction to nalthetic counseling. That's what I thought. Nalthetic counseling. What is nalthetic counseling? Well, CBD's selling it, so it's got to be good. So I got a pair of scissors. I cut out the order form. I filled it. I asked my mom to write a check. I put it in an envelope. This is the dark ages, you know. We put it on a wagon, I guess, and they went to go get the thing. And weeks later, I get Competent to Counsel in the mail. And I read Competent to Counsel on a bus the summer between my sophomore and senior year. Our youth group was going to Florida to do beach evangelism. A lot of beach, not much evangelism. I always say the most significant spiritual thing that happened that trip was on that. But I read Competent to Counsel basically my sophomore year in high school. And I just thought, okay, well, that's the way it is. I mean, this guy knows more than I do. And if you're going to do counseling, you need to do it the way Jay Adams does. And so that was my introduction. So I was committed to biblical counseling by my sophomore year. I never, ever dreamed when I went in, all I wanted to do in ministry was be a preacher. I didn't know that I was a biblical counselor. But I was for it. And so where I had to grow up in was, oh, this isn't just those guys over there. This is all of us in ministry, and I need to find a way to get good at this. But my introduction was competent to counsel.
That's pretty incredible. So talk from your sophomore year, and then a lot of people are introduced to Heath maybe in 2009, 2010, started, you know, working in at Southern and moving into ACBC and even the BCC. And so talk about that window of time and how you came, who were the influential people in your life, and how did you get to know them, and how did you start moving in that direction in biblical counseling?
Yeah, so I wound up in the PhD program at Southern, honestly, because they asked me to. They had switched the program from an integrationist program to a biblical counseling program. Some of my professors wanted me to get a PhD in systematic theology. That made no sense to me. I just couldn't imagine being the 1,000,000th graduate from the PhD program at Southern with systematic theology. I just couldn't imagine doing it. Didn't seem like it was necessary. I wanted to be a pastor. But when they changed the program to biblical counseling, and the dean of the School of Theology and the dean of the School of Leadership reached out and they said, hey, we need some good guys in the program that are going to help. We got to build our own guys up. And I thought, well, now that seems like something that's useful. If we don't have anybody and we need to grow a farm team, I'll do that. So we joined the PhD program at Southern with the hope that we could help contribute to the good changes that were happening there. And in that program, David Pallison was an adjunct teacher and he needed a research assistant. So all these people applied to be David Pallison's research assistant. Some way he picked me. And over the years from 2005 to 2009, I went from working for David to us being friends to I'm thankful to Al Mohler. He asked the trustees of Southern Seminary. David was at that point was an Episcopalian, for Pete's sake. He's a member of the faculty of a different institution. And Dr. Mohler asked the trustees at Southern to make the extraordinary move to have a non-resident faculty member be the supervisor of a candidate for PhD at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. And the trustees approved it. So then I've been working for him. We're friends. Now he's my PhD supervisor. So I did my doctoral dissertation under him. And then we remained friends. It's actually interesting. The same month that I became the executive director of NANC at the time, he became the executive director of CCEF. So we were friends. David was actually the chairman of the search committee for NANC that recommended me to the board and the board recommending me to the membership as executive director. So probably the most significant influence was David and our friendship and his mentoring of me. And then, you know, once you get a faculty position in biblical counseling, it starts to be a kind of a small world because everybody's hunting for those faculty guys. And so once you get in that world, it becomes pretty. So I just started making friends. Stuart Scott came. He was on the faculty at Southern. We became and have remained dear friends. David and I were dearest of friends till he went to heaven a couple of years ago. So, one thing led to another, and I wound up leading NANC, which became ACBC, and then we got to be friends, and now here we are.
Yeah, it's so great. It was a wonderful story. I want you to talk a little bit about how biblical counseling specifically has impacted your life as a pastor, as a professor when you were at Southern teaching. Just how has biblical counseling impacted your life, not just in terms of ministry, but even personally?
So pastor, you know, I think the most significant impact biblical counseling made on my pastoral ministry is I think it made me a better preacher. Now, if you've heard me preach and you think, boy, he's not very good, well, just imagine how bad it was before. You know, I mean, imagine what I've been, the depths I've been lifted from if you think I'm no good. But I mean, you know, here's the thing. And in fact, I'll say it impacted my teaching as a professor because I would prevail upon these seminary students. You know, I would get one shot at them in the required course. And I would say, guys, listen, you guys want to go be big hotshot preachers, but let me tell you something. You've got to figure out how to care for your people. And when you are a pastor, if you just think about pastor as preacher, your temptation is going to be to go in that room and shut the door, lock it, put a chair up against it, surround yourself with all sorts of fun, easy, submissive books. And in your preaching, what you will do if that, and I'm for books, I'm for study, and I'm not saying I'm against study, but I am against mere study. And if you do that, if you, all you do is study books and come up with a sermon out of that in front of your people, you will be interacting with commentaries. And 99% of your people don't care about that. 99% of your people must be, 100% of your people must be hit in a personal way with the truth. And so when you interact with people and you're talking to a broken woman and you realize that when you say one smart thing, it doesn't necessarily change her whole life. And you've got to figure out, how do I take the truth and get it into the grooves of her life? Counseling forces that. And you can't turn that off then when you get in the pulpit. You realize, I'm not having a conversation with smart people in the ivory tower. I'm having an interaction with people who are linemen and nursing home directors and stay-at-home moms and 9-year-olds. And I got to figure out how to take this truth and get it to them. Personally, I think biblical counseling saved my life. I could say a lot. But back in the day, Lauren and I used to do marriage counseling after the kids went to bed. When our kids were much younger, we'd do marriage counseling after they went to bed. And there'd be times when married couples would be leaving our house at 11, 1130, midnight. That's the reason we don't do it anymore. We went and got too old. We'd be comatose on the couch if we had somebody talking about their problems at 11 in our living room. But we would, so many nights, I'm telling you, we would thank them for coming, hug them, send them out the door, shut it and go, okay, they're in a mess. And they did not get that way overnight. Let's talk about how we need to do better right now before we get in that shape. I'm telling you, when I get to heaven, I'm going to find out that biblical counsel, I love my wife. She loves me. We love living together and doing life together. And there is a lot of joy in our home. And I'm going to get to heaven and find out that one of the main means the Lord used was just counseling people and realizing you cannot slouch. You got to stay ahead of problems. You got to encourage love at the front end and not. It was just a warning to us. We don't want bad habits to take root and get in a mess. So that's one story. I could tell a lot more, but that's something.
No, that's outstanding. And I want to encourage any of you who are in ministry, pursuing ministry, you probably should pause this right now and rewind. Listen to what Heath is saying again and how important pastoral ministry is in the way in which you engage in people's lives. And don't just think about counseling as counseling. I mean, he's describing it in such a helpful way that it enhances the way that you preach and address people with the word from the pulpit. So Heath, that's a really, really helpful. I want to talk about now. You're still your first pastor at a First Baptist Church in Jacksonville. You're leading a large ministry there, but you're still very involved, even in the biblical counseling movement. You've recently written a book on biblical counseling and common grace. We've recently done a panel together on Can Jesus Heal Trauma, which was a delight to do. You guys can find that out on the web. And you're still involved. Talk about how biblical counseling still impacts you today and your involvement in a biblical counseling movement.
Yeah, you know, so that, I'm glad you asked that question, because when I stepped down from ACBC back whatever year that was, so many people said, why are you leaving the movement? Why don't you care? And I was like, whoa. I am not leaving the biblical counseling movement. I'm leaving one job. And honestly, just this'll give me another opportunity to do what I love to do and encourage you. Honestly, you were involved in all those conversations. You know exactly what was going on. And I did feel like I needed to focus full time on First Baptist Jacksonville. But I think one of the great tasks of a leader is to ask a really hard question and answer it, which is even harder, which is, what does this thing that I'm leading right now, what does it really need? And do I have what it takes to give that? And my answer at ACBC was, I don't have what it takes to take ACBC to the next step, and Dale Johnson does. And so it just was so clear to me that the Lord was removing me from that position and was raising you up. And I think the last several years have proven that that is true, with your remarkable leadership and your ability to stand there and say, you shall not pass, you know, with some of these crazy people and what they're doing. So it just but I wasn't leaving and have not left biblical counseling. I love it more and am more committed than I have ever been. It's just the way that works itself out is different. And so we have a wonderful training center at First Baptist. We have 100, I think I just saw the report. We have something like 110 ongoing counseling cases right now at First Baptist, dozens and dozens of certified counselors. And I read and I pay attention and I am concerned. I think biblical counseling is ministry. I don't think it's like this adjunct addendum. I think it is ministry. And I think the only question is whether we will do it faithfully or not. And so I am committed. I'm not a leader in the movement in the same way. I want to be different. I always tell you at the beginning, you got it on tape now. Hey, I will do what you want me to do because I want to be a help in any way I can. And so I am reading, I'm paying attention. So when they say, hey, what about a forum? I want to do that. When they say, hey, you want to write this book? I want to do that. And I'm really, really excited about what's happening in biblical counseling. I'm mostly excited about what's happening at ACBC. I have concerns about some other institutions and some other ministries. And biblical counseling, there's always, always in every area of ministry, the greatest risk is always drift. Nobody ever wakes up and says, you know, I've been super faithful. I've been super conservative. And today I think I'm going to jerk the wheel left. Nobody ever says that, but it's step here, it's two steps there. And next thing you know, you look up and that thing way, way, way over there is where you used to be. And there is something about biblical counseling that is quicker to drift than some of the other things. And so you are leading ACBC and the movement in a really, really challenging time where there is a lot of instinct to drift and a lot of instinct to go in the wrong direction. And I'm thankful for your leadership and want to be supportive and helpful in any way I can.
And I'll add one other thing. He will be speaking at our 2024 annual conference, and I'm super excited about his involvement there. Heath, I want to finish with this. I have a lot of people ask me everywhere that I go, you know, how's Heath doing? And so I want you to give an update just so that people can hear from your perspective how things are going. You've been through a lot in the last 5 years, and so many people have been praying for you. Certainly our listeners have been praying for you. So give a quick update before we finish today.
Yeah. So, you know, the problem started with spasms on my right side, couldn't control movement on my right side, couldn't keep my eyes open, couldn't talk, couldn't chew, couldn't swallow. It's a little tiny nerve the size of a mechanical pencil lead and some blood vessels relocated and were resting on that and doing damage to the nerve and causing it to just be in trouble. So the surgery, neurosurgeons love to do it. They drill a hole in the back of your head and go in with tools to your brain and move the blood vessels over and pad the nerve. And 98% of the time that is successful. You're one and done. But that first surgery got botched in my case. And so then they had to go back and fix it a second time. And then that second surgery made things even worse. And so we moved medical centers and moved physicians. And the physician I've got now, Ricardo Hanel, go Dr. Hanel, love him. So thankful for him at Baptist Medical Center in Jacksonville. And he has needed to do right now so far 4 surgeries to fix basically the damage that was caused in those first two. But it seems like after the 6th one in July of 23, seems like I'm out of the woods. So there's still some wait and see. I got a nerve issue, I got an infection issue, and I got a wound issue. And in July, everybody said, "Man, you just woke up from this surgery. You're in a lot of trouble. We just need to tell you, things are not going the right direction." And so that's one of those. All right, Lord Jesus, the doctors say what works for everybody else doesn't work for you. So we need you to be the great physician. And do you know the Lord Jesus has been? He has been the great physician. And it seems where I was very much in the middle of the woods in July. If I'm not out yet, I can see the edge of the woods from here. I'm meeting with my neurosurgeon next week. And right now I feel great, very encouraged about what he's going to say. So all things seem to be moving in the right direction for the first time in about 5 years.
Amen. Well, we are rejoicing with you. So grateful for you and your ministry there at First Baptist Jacksonville and the partnership that we have through ACBC as well. I'm grateful for you, brother. And as I mentioned, even, you know, a few weeks ago at our annual conference, we're standing on sturdy shoulders, and we appreciate your work and how the Lord providentially brought you to where you are. And it's really great to hear this story. And I'm glad other people are going to be privy to it now as well. So thanks.
I'm always glad to talk to you.
You're listening to Truth and Love, a podcast of ACBC. So grateful for my brother Heath, and it's always good to catch up with him. And man, talking with him today reminded me that he is speaking at our annual conference coming up in T-1 week. Man, that's so exciting. And hopefully you're going to be joining us in Fort Worth, Texas, October 7th through 9th for our conference this year, The Care of Christ. I'm so looking forward to our time together in the Word. And I want to remind you that there are several ways that you can still register. If you've been the ultimate procrastinator and been waiting to join us, there are a couple of ways, obviously, that you can join us. You can still join us in person. We would love for you to be there in person, even if you wait till the last minute and walk up. So you can register through the website, or you can walk up to the conference October 7th. We would love to have you there in person. But for many of you, you're spread out around the country. You don't have a way to get to Dallas-Fort Worth. You can also join us virtually. We would love to have you join us virtually. It gives you access to all the plenaries and the breakouts as well, choices that you can have to check in with us in the breakouts. And then there's a special option, a group watch option. And we have several churches around the country that you have to have 10 or more, and you can do a group watch option where you show the conference there in your venue at the church and have a group of people there together watching it. We would love to have you join us that way. So I want to remind you several different ways that you can join us. We want you to be here for this conference as we talk about our Lord Jesus, the way in which he cared for souls as the great shepherd. And we want you to be with us as we walk through encouraging and challenging each other through the word to care for each other the way Christ cares for us. So go figure out a way to register, be there with us, whether it be virtually or in person. We'd love to have you. And you can find out more information at biblicalcounseling.com.